Ideas Have Consequences. The Cult of Charles Darwin, Part 3, by Mr. Cal Calsbeek. We read 1 Chronicles 12, verse 32. And of the children of Issachar, which were men that had understanding of the times, to know what Israel ought to do, the heads of them were 200, and all their brethren were at their commandment. Charles Darwin's ideas about natural selection as the driving force of evolution initially were of little consequence. Yes, the origin of species did upset many Bible believers, and it did provide unbelievers with a scientific alternative to God. But as unbelievers, they would have continued in their unbelief even without Darwin's theory. The real problem with Darwin's theory is that some of his followers took what he wrote seriously. In fact, they took action based on his flawed theories. Darwin himself led the way. What was implicit in his famous Origin of Species became explicit in the infamous book he wrote 12 years later. Charles Darwin was a eugenicist. In The Descent of Man and Selection in Relation to Sex, Darwin made crystal clear that his idea of survival of the fittest should be applied to human beings. Interestingly, Darwin's modern-day disciples seem hesitant to connect their hero to this book. Modern-day Issachar ought to know about these ideas of Darwin, how they were applied by Darwin and his disciples, the consequences of these ideas in the past and present, and, if left unchecked, where they will lead us in the future. The science of eugenics is an applied science. It takes some of the ideas of animal breeding and applies them to human beings. The science of eugenics seeks to speed up Darwin's theory of natural selection in human populations. Justification for eugenics is logical, given that the survival of the fittest human beings is going to happen anyway. Why not speed things up just a bit with human intervention, like the animal breeders successfully have done? In 1859, Darwin opened the way to eugenics in Origin of Species, where he wrote this: "As many more individuals of each species are born than can possibly survive, and as, consequently, there is a frequently recurring struggle for existence, it follows that any being, if it vary however slightly in any manner profitable to itself, under the complex and sometimes varying conditions of life, will have a better chance of surviving, and thus be naturally selected. From the strong principle of inheritance, any selected variety will tend to propagate its new and modified form." The careful reader will observe, in this quote and throughout The Origin of Species, the omission of human beings from the discussion. It is likely that this was by design, since Darwin knew that his ideas would be scandalous enough all by themselves without making the application of them to humans. Nevertheless, Darwin conjured up the courage to make the implicit explicit in The Descent of Man. There he wrote this: "With savages, the weak in body or mind are soon eliminated, and those that survive commonly exhibit a vigorous state of health. We civilized men, on the other hand, do our utmost to check the process of elimination. We build asylums for the imbecile, the maimed, and the sick. We institute poor laws, and our medical men exert their utmost skill to save the life of everyone to the last moment. There is reason to believe that vaccination has preserved thousands who from a weak constitution would formerly have succumbed to smallpox. Thus the weak members of civilized societies propagate their kind. No one who has attended to the breeding of domestic animals will doubt that this must be highly injurious to the race of man. It is surprising how soon a want of care, or care wrongly directed, leads to the degeneration of a domestic race. But, excepting in the case of man himself, hardly anyone is so ignorant as to allow his worst animals to breed. If, various checks, do not prevent the reckless, the vicious, and otherwise inferior members of society from increasing at a quicker rate than the better class of men, the nation will retrograde, as has occurred too often in the history of the world. We must remember that progress is no invariable rule. These seeds of Darwin would eventually grow and reap a better harvest. By 1917, Darwin's eugenics was fast making its way into the public schools. One high school textbook in use at that time presents a case for the practice of eugenics. The reasoning is summarized as follows. 1. Improvement of man. If the stock of domesticated animals can be improved, couldn't the same be done for future generations of humans? 2. Eugenics. When people marry, society should make certain demands to prevent the passing of diseases, feeble-mindedness, and handicaps to their posterity. Just to emphasize the point, a case study of a family named the Jukes was presented. Of their 480 descendants, 33 were sexually immoral, 24 were drunkards, 3 were epileptics, and 143 were feeble-minded. 3. Parasitism and its cost to society. Families like the Jukes do harm to others in society by stealing, spreading disease, and corrupting its members. At the same time, they are a drain on society's resources because they are protected and cared for by the state. They take from society and give nothing in return. In other words, they are parasites. 4. The remedy. If such people were lower animals, we would probably kill them off to prevent them from spreading. Humanity will not allow this, but we do have the remedy of separating the sexes in asylums or other places, and in various ways preventing intermarriage and the possibilities of perpetuating such a low and degenerate race. Remedies of this sort have been tried successfully in Europe and are now meeting with success in this country. The "this country" referred to in the text is the United States, and interestingly, this textbook was the one at issue in the Scopes trial of 1925. Nevertheless, while the textbook and Charles Darwin did not explicitly recommend the direct extermination of the inferior, Darwin did predict it. He wrote this: "At some future period, not very distant as measured in centuries, the civilized races of man will almost certainly exterminate and replace throughout the world the savage races. At the same time, the anthropomorphous, in other words, most human-looking, apes, will no doubt be exterminated. The break will then be rendered wider, for it will intervene between man in a more civilized state, as we may hope, than the Caucasian, and some ape as low as a baboon, instead of, as at present, between the Negro or Australian and the gorilla." While Darwin's language here is a bit confusing, his rankings are clear. Caucasians are at the top, with a Negro and Aboriginal Australian just slightly above the gorilla. And natural selection, with or without the help of man, is in the process of cleansing the world of the undesirables. Charles Darwin's prophecies came true not centuries, but mere decades later. And what were scientific prophecies for him became the destinies of others, two others in particular, Adolf Hitler and Margaret Sanger. Both would find aid, comfort, and scientific support for their programs in Darwin's theories of evolution and eugenics. Richard Weikart sums up the motivation of Hitler's eugenics and practice program for Europe as follows. Nazi barbarism was motivated by an ethic that prided itself on being scientific. The evolutionary process became the arbiter of all morality. Whatever promoted the evolutionary progress of humanity was deemed good, and whatever hindered biological improvement was considered morally bad. Multitudes must perish in this Malthusian struggle anyway, they reasoned, so why not improve humanity by speeding up the destruction of the disabled and the inferior races? According to this logic, the extermination of individuals and races deemed inferior and unfit was not only morally justified, but indeed morally praiseworthy. Thus Hitler, and many other Germans, perpetuated one of the most evil programs the world has ever witnessed, under the delusion that Darwinism could help us discover how to make the world better. What Hitler accomplished in the name of Darwinian evolution, and its obvious consequence, eugenics, in Europe, Margaret Sanger would accomplish in America. One main difference is in the numbers. Adolf would have his millions, while Margaret would have her tens of millions. Another difference was in the primary method. For Hitler, it was gas, and for Sanger, pills. That Sanger's concerns are rooted in Darwin is not difficult to demonstrate. She nearly plagiarizes Darwin's Descent of Man when she writes in her book, The Pivot of Civilization, this: modern studies indicate that insanity, epilepsy, criminality, prostitution, pauperism, and mental defect are all organically bound up together, and that the least intelligent and the thoroughly degenerate classes in every community are the most prolific. Feeble-mindedness in one generation becomes pauperism or insanity in the next. Sanger's solution? Birth control, or in her own words, when we realize that each feeble-minded person is a potential source of endless progeny of defect, we prefer the policy of immediate sterilization, of making sure that parenthood is absolutely prohibited to the feeble-minded. In an interesting but humorous aside, Sanger waxes eloquent, maybe even prophetic, in her writing about the consequences for a democracy of allowing the undesirables to breed. When the dead weight of human waste votes, Sanger complains, equality of political power has thus been bestowed upon the lowest elements of our population. We must not be surprised, therefore, at the spectacle of political scandal and graft, of the notorious and universally ridiculed low level of intelligence and flagrant stupidity exhibited by our legislative bodies. The congressional record mirrors our political imbecility. One would think that 75 years on Sanger's birth control program would have solved this problem, but alas, it appears to be worse than ever. All jesting aside, this is serious business. Sanger's Darwinian eugenics put into practice program has had devastating consequences. Don't forget, Margaret Sanger is the foundress of Planned Parenthood, and Planned Parenthood, in its zeal to do Sanger's bidding, has murdered countless millions of unborn children. No, they don't call it eugenics. Hitler and the Nazis made that a dirty word. But eugenics it is. Evidence of this is the work of an organization called Life Dynamics. In their fight to return full legal protection to unborn children, they have conducted an exhaustive study that shows that an incredibly high number of these facilities, abortion clinics, are located in zip codes that are disproportionately black or Hispanic. And I'm not talking about a little bit disproportionate, 10% or 15%. We found zip codes that were 1,800% disproportionate, and a ton of them that were 500% to 600% or 700%. Life Dynamics concludes that the report undeniably shows that the black and Hispanic communities are targeted by Planned Parenthood. If their conclusion is true, Planned Parenthood promotes eugenics, but with a different name, freedom of choice. Modern-day Issachar is not surprised by developments such as these. Darwin, Hitler, and Sanger are only a few of the pawns in the age-long history of the culture of death, initiated by the devil in the Garden of Eden. Ideas have consequences, and bad ideas have bad consequences. If these bad ideas are not rejected, they will develop as sin always does. As the day of the Lord becomes more and more imminent, so also does the development of our modern world's culture of death, a path that leads to barbarism. A path that begins with abortion to terminate an unwanted pregnancy doesn't stop there. The path moves on to aborting to avoid the need to care for a mentally retarded child. It moves on to aborting the child because she is a girl. It moves on to aborting to avoid certain genetic imperfections, and on and on. And is there really a difference between killing a child 1 week before birth and killing him 1 week after? Or maybe 28 days after birth? as Princeton's ethicist Peter Singer would have it? Or, and what about the other end of life? If open season on the young is okay, what about the aged and infirm? Certainly the aged have little to offer society. In fact, Darwin and his disciples would conclude that they are parasites. And why would not today's children consent to such a thing? After all, their parents cared so little for them when they were young that they cast them into the daycare center when they were 6 weeks old, doped them with video games, and mesmerized them with television so the parents wouldn't be bothered. Why not reciprocate when the parents become old and bothersome? The Lord said it would happen, and children shall rise up against their parents and shall cause them to be put to death. Mark 13, verse 12. And what about the Christians? Are the altars of the culture of death ever satisfied? Reread Matthew 24, verse 9 through 22. Darwinian evolution requires death. Thus death becomes the necessary method for cleansing society of its undesirables. This is the culture of death legacy of Charles Darwin. But it gets worse. To be continued.